Blood drips. From high above, a uniformed man paces through a glass and steel building. A figure carries a knife dripping with blood along a corridor. A chiseled-looking young man in a white t-shirt, Jimmy, turns over in bed. Empathy, written by Steve Lightfoot. Jimmy sits up, looking troubled. In a storeroom, a man brutally batters another while Jimmy looks on in silence. The assailant, Strick, puts his fingers to his lips. Now, wearing blue overalls with E-block written on them, Strick is marched along by guards. Jimmy's head smashed against the wall of a cell. Then, in a corridor, he knifes another prisoner, his face spattered with blood. A key turns in a lock. A crowd of men in blue prison overalls are let into a room. A tattooed prisoner, then one with a set of gleaming metal teeth. A hand rubs condensation off a mirror, and Jimmy stares into it as he shaves. Now dressed in a dark shirt, he strips photos off the wall of his cell. One is of himself with a smiling blonde woman, and another is of a flaxen-haired toddler. He smiles at a child's painting, then stows it with the photos in a holdall. An older prisoner appears in the doorway.
New life starts today, right?
I hope so. Unless the old one comes looking for me.
Listen, Jimmy, I've been in and out of these places all my life. There's only two sorts of blokes walks out those doors. Those looking forward and those looking back. You keep looking back, you might as well stay here. Don't forget to send your old mate plenty of fags, all right?
You could just give up, you know.
Time for that when I'm dead.
A guard appears.
Go on then. I'm going to miss you. But don't you dare come back.
You ready? Definitely.
The bespectacled prison officer opens a steel-grilled door and Jimmy steps through onto a prison landing. He follows the guard down a flight of steel and concrete steps past crowds of prisoners. The harsh lights above cast brilliant circles on the grey floor. Jimmy walks impassively, carrying his holdall, his face betraying no emotion. Jimmy and the guard look up to see Strick sitting in a wheelchair on the landing above. Jimmy shoulders his holdall and ploughs on. They walk past CCTV monitors into a metal-lined corridor, then out through a doorway at the end. A door opens in a huge metal wall, and Jimmy and the guard step through.
You take care of yourself, Collins.
The guard holds out his hand.
Thanks, Mr. Kennedy.
As Jimmy grips Kennedy's hand, he suddenly gets a vision of the guard battering a woman.
Ow! I'm sorry.
Jimmy! You all right? Need to come back inside?
No, I'm fine, thanks. I'm good.
You sure?
I'm good.
Jimmy stares at Kennedy.
I'm good.
Shaken, he picks up his holdall and heads off. Traffic thunders by as Jimmy strides along a busy city street. Distracted by the bustle, he bumps into a young man. He grabs the man's arm to steady him and gets an image of him stealing a purse from a woman's bag. Jimmy turns, confused, then collides with a woman with a pushchair.
Oh, sorry.
Tripping over, he brushes past her baby and gets an image of the chuckling infant. Jimmy shakes his head, bewildered, then keeps walking. He looks back down the street, his handsome face clouded by confusion, then forges on. A white door at the end of a narrow corridor opens, and Jimmy steps through. He walks up a dingy, grey-painted staircase with a piece of paper in his hand. He opens a door and lets himself into a sparsely furnished room. He tries the light switch, but nothing happens. Dumping his hold-all on an unforgiving single bed, he opens the sand-coloured curtains and sees a view outside of a brick wall. He sinks down on the bed and looks around the room. A montage of the day's images flash through his mind. The blonde woman in Jimmy's photo answers the phone.
Hello?
Hello?
Who's this?
It's me. It's Jimmy. Sarah. I'm out.
That's great, Jimmy. Really great.
Sorry to spring this on you.
No, I always knew it would come.
I'd like to see Amy.
Right, of course.
Can I come round tomorrow?
Yeah.
After school? 4 o'clock?
I'll be there.
Good.
Jimmy puts down the phone, his face lit up with pleasure. Later, the curtains in his room are closed, and he's stroking a picture of a beaming little girl with windswept flaxen hair. He reaches onto his bedside table and studies a photo of Sarah by the light of a lamp. Her serene face is smiling. His expression sobers as memories come flooding back.
Talk to me, tell me who it was. Tell me who it was, tell me.
Yeah, I bet it was Gavin.
Distraught, with her blue shirt in tatters, Sarah presses her forehead to Jimmy's. He nods grimly, then tears free. Now he's kicking a shaven-headed man, Gavin, slamming him up against a car, driving his fist into his face, then striding through an estate with cold implacability. He beats Gavin's face into a bloody pulp, ruthless as a machine. At last he stops, his face contorted with rage and anguish. Back in the present, Jimmy takes a deep breath. Across the road is a large detached house. Sarah opens the door to him.
Hey.
Hello, Jimmy.
Sorry I'm a bit early. I was so desperate not to be late that I ended up getting here a bit too soon and then didn't want to stand out on the pavement and...
It's fine, really. You've lost weight.
Well, I don't know how. I've been eating so well. You look great.
Thank you.
Inside the house, Jimmy looks around, his blue eyes taking in every corner of the room. He bends down to look at a picture of Sarah with Amy, now a little older. With them is a man with a broad grin, his hands protectively on each of their shoulders. He straightens as Sarah comes in with two mugs.
Thanks.
You want to sit down?
It's a nice house. Looks like you're doing well for yourself.
We're okay.
They sit down.
I'm glad. I'm pleased for you.
We had to get on with things, Jimmy.
I know that.
Sorry, I promised myself I wasn't going to do that. It's just I got past it, you know, the guilt.
I don't blame you, Sarah.
You're always good at playing the bloody martyr.
And you were always good at pointing it out.
He looks startled at the sound.
I better go and...
Yeah.
She puts down her mug and hurries out. Jimmy has a flashback of being led away by police and Sarah turning her bruised face to him, cradling a tiny Amy on her lap. A long look passes between them. Sarah returns with a little baby in her arms. Jimmy smiles at them as they sit down.
You always did want to.
I'm sorry, Jimmy. I should have said, warned you.
Should have expected it. What's his name?
David. Same as Dan's father. He... That'll be Amy.
Oh, Christ.
Sarah goes into the hall. Jimmy lingers in the sitting room, rubbing his hands nervously, then sits again. He springs up as Sarah returns with Amy.
Amy, this is...
my dad. I'm glad you're out.
Me too. Do you remember me?
Of course, I wasn't a baby.
Of course not. I never stopped thinking about you.
But you didn't want to see us.
I did.
Amy takes off her satchel and walks into her father's arms. Images flood in.
Draw some kisses for Daddy.
Jimmy crumples into the seat.
You all right?
Yeah, it's just all a bit much.
I'm sorry.
No, Amy, don't you apologise. It's all right. Look, I'm back. So, Mum's got my address and stuff if you need it, and if you want
to
see me or you want
to
need anything.
Jimmy, what's wrong? Jimmy!
At the door, she catches hold of his arm.
It's going to be all right.
As Sarah holds him, he sees her husband Dan in the afterglow of their lovemaking.
I love you.
I love you.
What did you say?
Nothing.
He pulls away from her and goes out the front door. In his room, Jimmy clenches his hands and pounds the bed in frustration. He stares at his hands, gripping them until they spasm. He delves into his pocket and takes out a wide gold wedding ring. He lays it on the palm of his hand, then folds his fingers around it. Amy's on her way out of school. Amy chatters with her friends as Jimmy strolls up, searching the hordes of schoolgirls for his daughter. She looks up and grins in his direction. Jimmy looks gutted as she gets into a car with Sarah's husband, Dan. He watches the car pull away. Amy spots him in the crowd. She looks back at him as the car drives past. Ruefully, Jimmy collects himself, then walks off. A door opens into a dark room and a man flicks on the light.
Drink?
Yes.
Whiskey?
Always.
Jimmy's companion switches on a light in the kitchen.
It's great to have you back, Jimmy.
Jimmy notices a shelf of mementos, including a wedding photo.
We looked good, didn't we?
Jimmy kneels down for a closer look. His friend brings him a drink.
Happy days.
The best. She was so beautiful. I'm sorry I wasn't there for you, Jack.
It was 3 years ago last week she died, Jimmy.
I should sell this place, really. Every little thing reminds me of her. I love it and I hate it.
It's home.
Yeah, and now you're home too, so let's stop with the maudlin shit, right? Life starts here.
I hope so, mate, I really do.
His friend Jack nods.
As long as I don't go mad first.
What are you on about? Come on.
I've been seeing things. I can't believe I'm going to tell you this. It's, seriously, I don't know. I thought it was just stress at first. Having finally been released, you know, but it keeps happening. You hear about it, don't you? Blokes not being able to cope on the outside and just losing the plot.
It'll be nothing. You've seen nothing but cell walls for years. No wonder you freaked out. and that won't be helping.
As Jack touches his hand, Jimmy sees him crushing up pills in a glass, then helping a woman to drink from it. Jimmy collapses.
Oh, Jesus Christ, Jimmy!
You killed her.
Jimmy, you're pissed, mate.
You crushed up Maggie's pills.
What are you saying? Jimmy,
did you do that? Did you do that?
Get out.
Jack, no, I need to
get
know.
Get out.
Jack, please.
Just get out!
I just please, need
please,
out of my
Jack.
House!
Please, please! Jack!
Jack! Once Jimmy's outside, Jack leans back against the door breathlessly, looking terrified. Jimmy walks through the nighttime streets as if without a purpose. Next, he's sitting on the ground, staring at his hands. A fearful expression plays on his face, tinged with melancholy. He rubs his hands over his face, then clasps them together. Now, in a hospital corridor, Jimmy is woken up by a doctor.
Mr. Collins? I'm Dr. Krishnan. Notes say you have a head injury.
Not exactly.
So what is it, exactly?
I've been seeing things.
You've been drinking, correct? Heavily, I'm guessing. Is that when you see these things?
I'm not drunk. And the... whatever it is I'm seeing, it started before I had a drink.
You haven't banged your head or drugs? Taken any drugs?
No.
This is the emergency department, Mr. Collins. I suggest you go to your GP.
I haven't got one. I've just got out of prison 2 days ago. It's not been top of my list.
You're in the wrong place, Mr.
I am not going anywhere. Sorry. Either there's something seriously wrong in... or I'm going mental and... I need you to help me, please.
Then we'll get you some outpatient referrals. How's that? Get you into a neurologist and a psychiatrist. That'll cover all the bases. I'll do the paperwork and they'll write to you with appointment times.
Looking frustrated, Jimmy runs his hands through his hair, then marches away. Outside, he plunges his hands deep down into his pockets as he walks along the street. He nervously glances behind him as he goes. He climbs the metal staircase of a block of flats, then takes out some keys. Moments later, he's filling a kettle in his kitchen.
Hello.
Jimmy, it's Mr. Kennedy.
Hello, Mr. Kennedy.
You doing all right?
No, I'm not doing bad, thanks.
Afraid I've got some bad news.
What?
Your old pal Walter's dead.
When?
A couple of days back. It was a heart attack. The funeral's in Manchester.
Well, thanks for letting me know.
Sorry, Jimmy. He was the only decent bloke in here.
Yeah.
Jimmy remembers standing with Walter in a doorway. The older man blows smoke from his cigarette as they gaze at something in the distance. At a train station, Jimmy's running along a platform carrying his hold-on. He leaps onto a carriage, then the train pulls away. In a hotel room...
So you were passing through, or are you here for work?
I'm visiting an old friend.
Bathroom?
Lovely.
Well, shout if you need anything, yeah?
Thanks.
The landlady leaves the room, and Jimmy sits down on the end of the bed. At a cemetery, Jimmy, wearing a black suit, is standing by the side of an open grave. He pulls out a pack of cigarettes.
For the road, old mate.
He throws the cigarettes onto the coffin, then walks off between the graves. Later, back at the B&B, the landlady comes in as Jimmy's searching through the kitchen cupboards with a white plastic bag in his hand.
You been far?
Chinese.
Oh. You planning to eat that in here, are you?
Yeah, is that all right?
Well, only if you share it. I am starving. So, married, single, or cohabiting?
Divorced.
Aren't we all? Is that why you're so miserable?
Am I?
You might as well have a big badge.
I'm smiling on the inside.
The way I see it, you either feel sorry for yourself or you just enjoy things where you can.
It's not a bad philosophy. Might have to give that a try. Go wild.
And when was the last time you did?
9 years.
Bloody hell.
Must be some kind of record. I'm probably due a certificate.
Well, you definitely do something.
She straddles him naked in bed and he clutches the side of the mattress as they have sex.
Touch me.
Touching her, he has a vision of another man having sex with her and laughs. He grips the bedstead. Daytime. Jimmy gets off a train and walks along the platform. He's pushed by someone and grabs a guy's jacket to keep his balance. He has a vision of a nighttime attack.
Are you deaf? Get off me! What did you do? What did you do?
The guy wriggles out of his jacket and runs off.
Are you all right?
I'm fine, thanks.
Want me to get somebody? A policeman?
No, no police, honestly. Fine. Thanks. I'm fine.
Hey, you forgot this.
It's the guy's jacket. Taking it, Jimmy has more visions.
Thanks.
Jimmy takes the leather jacket, then races away from the platform. Back at home, he drops down onto the sofa and hangs his head. He unzips his holdall and flexes his fingers before reaching in for the jacket. Images of a young girl with long blonde hair running through a wood flash through his mind. She falls, then someone lifts up a rock. Shaking, Jimmy's eyes dart around the room. Now sunlight dapples a lake at the edge of some woods. A forensic team are working around the body of a young girl, now in a black mortuary bag. A steely-faced detective stands nearby.
Are you going to have a look at this or not?
I don't need to have a look. You're having a look. I'll read the report. That's teamwork.
It's not the same.
Yeah, I know. That's the whole point. Oh, can we go before I'm wearing someone else's dinner? I need a fag.
You still off them, then?
Yep. At this rate, I'll have no teeth left.
You never know. You might end up with a jawline like George Clooney.
Oh, it's always about you, isn't it?
Joe, well, she fits the description of Elisa Turner. Parents reported her missing yesterday.
No accident to take it?
Well, not unless she bashed herself on the head and then weighted her own body.
Sit, please, Mr. Collins. I call you Jimmy?
Looking uncomfortable, Jimmy glances around the therapist's room before taking a seat.
Relax. So, why don't you tell me what the problem is? And we can go from there. We can sit here all day.
I see things. Stuff that I'm not supposed to.
Visions?
If you want.
And when do these visions occur?
When I touch people.
And they started when you left prison?
The moment I stepped out of the gates.
Did you deserve to be in prison, Jimmy?
What's that got to do with anything?
Guilt's a powerful emotion. One we often try to bury, but when we bury things, they tend to pop up someplace else.
So you think this is happening to me because I feel guilty?
Do you? What happens in these visions?
Bad stuff, usually. I keep seeing this girl. someone attacking her.
So they are violent scenes?
Not all of them.
Mainly. And your crime was a violent one?
Yeah.
And you admit some guilt for it?
Admitted. I've lived with that, I've done the time. Why now, when I'm out?
Maybe you see these things of others to hide how you feel about yourself.
You think I'm imagining it?
Perhaps the act is a barrier to stop you moving on and living life as you wish.
I've been here for 5 minutes and you've got it all wrapped up.
It's not an uncommon scenario, Jimmy.
So I am losing the plot.
The very fact you're here proves that you aren't. I'll get the office to book you in. Say, twice a week.
When the therapist offers his hand, Jimmy laughs to himself, then takes it.
Same time next week, Jane.
Who's Jane?
The therapist pulls his hand away.
You know her, don't you?
That's a very common name. There's every chance, eh?
And that'll be my guilt, will it?
Jimmy heads out. At the police headquarters.
Any joy from the witness appeal?
No, nor the school. Lisa was a bit of a wild child, according to the kids, but well-liked. Or, according to Mum and Dad, she was an angel who did her homework, kept away from boys, and never got into any trouble.
Well, there's a surprise. You want to guess who's right?
Ah, the autopsy report.
Yeah, Mum posits that little angel was 8 weeks pregnant.
Oh, well, it could be a motive.
You got it solved already? The assailant hit her once from the front, probably with his fist, then repeatedly on the back of the head with a rock, something like that.
And then dumped her in the lake.
Yeah, she was definitely dead when she went in.
There's no evidence of sexual assault.
Yeah, but doesn't mean it wasn't there. She'd been in the water overnight. Okay, look, we better start dragging in all the local head cases.
The sophisticated modern policeman.
You know what? I hope I'm wrong, because then I won't get depressed. But a tenor says there's some lunatic we've arrested before.
Jimmy's sitting at a bus stop reading a newspaper. He turns the page to a headline which reads, "Missing Lisa found in lake." It's the girl from his vision. He looks down at the girl's picture in disbelief. At Jack's.
Please, can you open the door? Please.
I know I'm the last person that you want to see. And after what happened, I don't blame you, really. But that's the problem. I can't control it. I touch someone and then bang, and I know. And I can't pretend that I don't, I feel it. And I know what you did. I know that Maggie begged you to do it. And I know how much you hurt, Jack, because it's like I was there with you. But I need you to tell me that I'm right. Please. I need to know if what I'm seeing is real.
Inside, Jack brings them a drink.
Pain just got worse and worse. She was either out of her head in agony or out of it from the drugs. And there was nothing that I could do about it. And then one day she asked me to help her. It was the one thing that I could do.
I understand. I'm so sorry. That's why I had to come. To know if what I saw was real, because if it was, then everything else is too.
He hands Jack the newspaper, which is open at the murder story.
I've touched him. The bloke who did this. I got off a train, and then suddenly I was him, smashing this kid up with a rock.
Christ.
And it's in there. And I have to really concentrate to stop from seeing it.
Have you told anyone about this?
Who can I tell? The police? I mean, you couldn't believe it. What the hell are they going to think? Bloke with my record, I'm going to end up with a coat with a zip up the back.
And don't get involved.
Well, I'm fairly certain that I am having visions. Like I'm psychic or whatever you want. I can't say that to the police.
I'm agreeing with you. They'll catch him anyway, they always do. Look at it this way. They're no worse off without you, are they?
We don't know that. Maybe I'd make all the difference.
If it was me, Jimmy, I'd stay well away, because this is the last thing you need right now. I mean, if I had that, I wouldn't be telling a soul about it. Please, for me, mate, put yourself first.
Jimmy returns home. Later, he's watching the TV.
So please, anyone out there who might know who did this to Lisa, please come forward. She was our little girl. Our angel. This man has taken her away from us. This bastard deserves to be hung. Please, stop him before he can do it to some other kid. Please.
I think that's enough, ladies and gentlemen, please. Thank you. That'll do now. Thank you.
Watching the broadcast, tears well in his eyes. Later, sitting at the table, he remembers the vision. Now, carrying the jacket in a blue plastic bag, Jimmy walks into the police headquarters and rests his arms on the reception desk while glancing around nervously. Some time later, the two detectives walk into an interview room where Jimmy's waiting for them. The carrier bag is on the table next to him.
I'm Detective Inspector Benson. This is Sergeant Kavanagh.
Jimmy Collins. I would rather not. No offence.
None taken.
Benson withdraws his hand and sits down.
So, Mr. Collins, you told our receptionist that you saw Lisa Turner's murder.
Yeah.
Tell us what you saw.
He hit her on the head and she fell down onto the ground, and then he picked up a rock and he hit her again.
And you saw this, but did nothing.
Can you give us a description of the man? What did he look like?
He was young, early 20s, had dark hair and scruffy clothes.
Race?
White.
Where'd you see this, Mr. Collins?
On the heath.
Big place. Can you be a bit more specific?
It was dark.
Okay, but you were there. You saw a murder. You must know whereabouts you were.
Jimmy lowers his eyes. Kavanagh leans towards him.
We get a lot of people in here, Mr. Collins, telling us that they saw things. Now, unless you can tell us when and exactly where you saw Lisa being attacked.
I have visions when I touch people or things. And when I touched this, I saw Lisa being killed.
Brilliant. Good. Well, I suggest you have visions in your own time and stop wasting ours.
I am not wasting your time.
Mr. Collins?
She was wearing white trainers and grey tracksuit bottoms and a pink top with a zip. It was a hoodie. It had letters on the front and a number, 83. She had blonde hair, long blonde hair, and it whipped round as he hit her. He hit her again and again and again. He picked up a rock. He was right-handed. He was wearing a watch. It was just after 11 o'clock.
They stare at him for a moment.
If you'll give us a second, Mr. Collins.
Jimmy studies them as they leave. In the office, Benson's looking at mugshot pictures of Jimmy on his computer. He goes on to find details of his crimes, including a murder and GBH charge whilst inside prison. While Jimmy sits stewing in the interview room, Benson and Kavanagh go to see their boss, Clough.
He looked like the usual time waster, but the things he described are just too close. It's stuff we haven't made public.
Yeah, and he never mentioned the lake like all the other lunatics. He actually described a murder.
Previous convictions?
GBH on a neighbour who assaulted his wife, and a manslaughter conviction after he killed a bloke when he was inside. Put another in a wheelchair, and he was only released on the 1st.
All right. Get some presumptive tests on the coat. And if there's anything there, we'll fast-track it for DNA.
You know what Lisa was wearing and the nature of her death. How do you know these things?
I told you.
The visions.
Look, Jimmy, when people do bad things, they often say they heard voices or they blacked out.
Is that what happened, Jimmy? Did the devil make you do it? What do you expect us to think here? Seriously?
I expect you to listen.
Oh, come on, Jimmy. You're obviously guilty. You're remorseful. That's why you're here. But that's good. That'll help your case. But only if you drop the visions and you tell us the truth.
9 years I was inside. And then when I get out, this happens. I feel like I'm going fucking mad.
How would you feel if it happened to you, eh?
It's irrelevant what I feel.
Please, Mr. Collins, calm down. We just need to know where you were on the night of the 5th.
I was in Manchester for a funeral.
Someone can corroborate this.
The B&B owner. She'll remember me.
Benson runs along the train platform, then later sits drinking tea in the B&B where Jimmy stayed.
The 5th,
he said. Please,
The landlady's husband's in the room. She checks a diary.
Can't have been. Howard was away. I don't take single men when Howard's away. He worries about me here on my own. Never know who they might be. Sorry.
No, that's really helpful, thank you.
Kavanagh goes into the interview room with a uniformed officer.
James Collins, I'm arresting you on suspicion of murder. You do not have to say anything, but it may harm your defense if you do not mention that which you later rely on in court. Anything you do say may be given in evidence against you. Mr. Collins, do you understand these rights?
Yes.
Jimmy's led down a corridor by an officer, then put into a cell. Benson and Kavanagh are at Jimmy's flat. As police officers are searching through his wardrobe, Jimmy huddles on the bed in his cell, staring into space and remembering images from the young girl's murder. Jimmy rubs his mouth in frustration. At his flat, Kavanagh spots something on the side. It's a framed photograph of Jimmy, Sarah and Amy. She picks it up and stares at it. At the police station, Jimmy's on the phone.
Look, Sarah, I'm sorry about this, but I've been arrested.
What?
I haven't done anything wrong. It's just a big misunderstanding.
You've only been out a week.
I haven't done anything.
They don't arrest people for no reason, Jimmy. What am I meant to say?
It's complicated.
You couldn't last a week without getting into trouble again.
Oh, come on, that's not fair.
What's not fair is you bringing me with this. What am I meant to do? We've got a life, Jimmy. You can't bring this into it. I'm not putting Amy through that again.
So, you're saying that telling the truth isn't a good defence?
I'm saying that visions aren't a generally accepted form of evidence. Here's the thing. If you were planning to confess to the crime, then you've laid good ground for a diminished responsibility plea.
But I'm not guilty.
Then you just sound insane. However, that's not a crime in itself, so I suggest we stick to the facts, keep the visions to ourselves, and try and get you out of here.
So you want me to lie?
I'm just saying I'm no use to you if you insist on maintaining this story.
But it's the truth!
Look, as far as they and I am concerned, it can't be.
Then you're no good to me, are you?
Jimmy rests his head against the wall with a look of exasperation as the solicitor lets herself out. He has a flashback to his time in prison. In the storeroom, Strick signals for him to be quiet, then his heavy beats Jimmy in his cell. Strick holds a photo of Amy.
Sounds gonna be going at night. Till I get out. And come visit her personally.
Jimmy's thrown onto his bunk. In the present.
That landlady in Manchester never heard of you.
No, she's lying. She's lying. I had sex with her. She's lying.
Sit down.
Or what? What else have you got left to threaten me with?
Sit.
She's lying!
Benson takes a seat, and looking broken, Jimmy does the same.
She's lying.
No one remembers you from the funeral either.
What?
You're on your own, Jimmy.
Do you really know what you've been doing? Hmm? Sex with women who don't know you? Fights in train stations with unknown killers? Visions of other people's crimes?
He's out there. There is no he. You, Jimmy, there is no he. You know that.
No.
Jimmy looks scared. He's led along a corridor by some police officers. Now, in a vision, he's chasing after Lisa in the woods. He strikes her, then brings the rock down onto her bloody skull. It's a nightmare, and he wakes from it to sit bolt upright in his cell. Kavanagh's in bed.
Joe Kavanagh. What?
A body hidden between mounds of gravel on some waste ground.
Do we know who she is yet?
Susan Evans was reported missing last night. Matches her description. She's 16.
2 in a week. Jesus.
Well, we can't fault Collins' alibi for this one.
Like buses are, they dead kids. Nothing for ages, then they all start turning up.
Clough and Kavanagh share a look. At the mortuary, a couple look at Susan's body.
That's Susan. That's
Lydia. Lisa's father walks off in distress, and her mother follows him. They embrace, under the gaze of Benson and Kavanagh. Later, Clough's showing his team some CCTV footage.
Right, this is from Euston on the Saturday the 6th.
He was telling the truth.
But the CCTV cameras put him in Manchester on the night of the 5th, returning the following day.
So why did he lie about the B&B?
He didn't. Now, your B&B woman walked into her local Nick this morning when she realised it was a murder inquiry. Collins was there and she did sleep with him. She lied because she was terrified of what her husband might do.
Well, what about the coat?
Well, the coat we got from Collins is back from the lab, and it does show traces of Lisa Turner's blood. But we now know Collins has an alibi for both the murders. So I want... Look, see this man? I want to blow up with this guy's face. As soon as possible. Right? We need to find this man.
A police officer opens the door to Jimmy's cell, and Jimmy looks up with a blank expression. The officer throws him a clear plastic bag containing his belongings, and Jimmy looks down at it with surprise. Jimmy makes his way wearily out of the station. As he gets to the door, something makes him hesitate and he turns around. To Benson.
I told you I didn't have anything to do with it.
And I still don't believe you.
Benson glares at him as he leaves. Now, Jimmy's striding along a quiet suburban street. He heads up the path to Sarah's house. In her kitchen.
You know this girl, Lisa Turner, that's been on the news? Well, I thought I saw something. So I went to the police to tell them about it. I was trying to do something right for once, but all they saw was an ex-con with a violent past, so they kept me in.
They must have had some reason.
You're beginning to sound like them. Couldn't you just trust me for once?
Look, I'm really sorry that this has happened, Jimmy, but
I've got to think about Amy. All this, it brings things back. It's upsetting. I can't let you upset her again.
What about what I want?
I told you to stay upstairs.
What, you talk about me like I don't exist? When you told me he was out, you said it was up to me, and I want to talk to him.
Things have changed.
He's still my dad. Should we go out somewhere?
Go on.
Benson's at Susan's house, holding a computer.
We just need to check for any emails or signs of contact.
I just can't bear the thought that this man was communicating with her, luring her.
Well, if either of you feels you need more help, then...
Benson carries the computer out. At Lisa's, her father's angrily grabbing a laptop from his daughter's room. To Kavanagh.
You know, it's bad enough she's dead. But you lot have to come in here making us relive it. Taking every last little bit of her. Here, have it.
Jimmy arrives home with Amy.
Want a grand tour?
Might as well.
Through there. The lounge. Come dining room. Come breakfast room. And there's a garden. It's the kitchen. All mod cons. Bathroom.
She follows them through to the bathroom and he turns on the light.
There. This is my bedroom.
He quickly makes the bed.
And, that's a spare room. Which I thought could be your bedroom. If things work well between us, then, you know, at some point you could stay over, but only if you wanted to.
It's a good plan. Mum cried a lot after you stopped seeing us.
That's,
it's complicated.
That's what she says when she doesn't want to give me a straight answer.
Your mum's moved on. What I think isn't important. I'm glad she's happy.
She still cares about you. She worries.
Well, she shouldn't. I'm fine. Unless I'm late getting you back.
We'll be all right.
No, it won't. I know her. Come on.
Dad? I've really enjoyed today.
Jimmy and Amy walk along a busy street, chatting happily. In the hospital.
The MRI scan will help us either identify the problem or, failing that, rule out a lot of potential causes.
But it could be a tumour, right? I've read up on what's been happening to me, how if it's in the temporal lobe, it could be causing these visions.
The temporal lobe helps to control behaviour, memory, hearing, sight, and your emotions. Your emotional memory is in this area, so a tumour here can cause strange feelings of déjà vu, having been somewhere or done something before.
That's it. That's what's been happening.
A brain tumour isn't the only cause of such things, Mr. Collins, or even the most common. And not all your symptoms fit. How's it going with the psychiatrist?
It's not. Look, whatever I'm seeing, I am seeing it. It's real. I want you to find out what's causing it and stop it.
And if we find nothing?
Now, Jimmy's inside the MRI scanner. As he's moved slowly through it, he has a frenzied recap of the visions that have come to him since leaving prison. The doctor studies an image of his brain on a screen. Now, Jimmy's at home watching TV.
Appeal for information following the discovery of a second murdered teen. Only a week after 16-year-old schoolgirl Lisa Turner's body was found in Holly Lake.
Reluctantly, he gets up and goes to the door to let Jack in.
Less than a mile away. So far,
Jimmy turns his attention immediately back to the news, while Jack takes a seat on the edge of the sofa.
They're so busy trying to prove it was me. He's gone and killed another girl. And now he just keep going, he won't be able to stop himself. Maybe I've got to stop him.
Maybe that's it. Put things right for what I've done. Then maybe the visions will go away.
Whoa. You're losing me now, Jimmy. This is all getting a bit mystic.
I see things, Jack. How much more mystic do you want? There's got to be a reason.
Jimmy takes the top off a couple of beers.
I'm beginning to think that the visions might be a punishment.
He hands one to Jack.
But maybe they're a chance too. Chance for me to redeem myself.
Later, Jimmy's asleep. He dreams of the assault he carried out on the man who attacked Sarah. He stares down at his hands, then remembers Walter handing him a makeshift knife. Jimmy picks up the weapon, then glances at Walter, who's smiling at him through a veil of smoke. Jimmy rubs his fingers together, looking at his hands with wonder. Now, Jimmy's at the patch of wasteland where Susan's body was found. He's close to the police tape cordoning off the mounds of gravel. Jimmy ducks under the tape, then strides between the gravel mounds to an area curtained off by plastic sheeting. Inside, he crouches down on the ground and places his hand on some rubble. He sees Susan running and coming to a dead end of fencing near the gravel mounds. Some time later, Kavanagh screeches up in her car. Jimmy's with a police officer. As she approaches, Jimmy gives her a little wave.
What's the story?
The fellow was out walking his dog. Caught a man here in the bushes. He got under the incident tape. Assumed he was some kind of pervert.
Citizen's arrest, I think they call it.
And where were you two?
There's no toilets up here.
Get him out of here. Give me one good reason why I shouldn't arrest you right now.
Just give me 10 minutes. No tape recorders, no lawyers, no questions. You just listen to me. And then if you want, I'll go away.
I think the visions are some sort of punishment for what I've done. Like I have to square things up.
You're convicted of manslaughter. It's hardly the same thing. I've read your file.
Not everything is black and white. I know what I am seeing is real. It's not the kid from Euston. He's an older man. I was him again today, in there.
There's no proof it's even the same man.
It is, I promise you. And I am meant to help you catch him.
You're right, Jimmy. I don't think you killed her, but I do think you need help. I'm gonna go. Now just stay away from the investigation for your own good.
Wait.
He grabs her arm and has a vision in which a plainclothes police officer plants drugs in a flat, then nods at Kavanagh.
So why didn't you plant evidence to nail me for Lisa? You've done it before, right? Was he your boss? You saw him plant something, didn't you?
Kavanagh walks off, looking unnerved. Later, she's at her desk working at her computer. She's studying newspaper stories about psychics helping in police investigations. She looks thoughtful. At home, Jimmy's struggling to keep the images of the brutal murders out of his head. He reaches for a tablet and a glass of whiskey. He shakes his head as fragments of the visions invade his thoughts. At police HQ, Clough is with Benson. Kavanagh spots them and goes over.
Sir,
Sir, can I have a minute? I've got something that could help.
Always got a minute for you, Joe. Come on, give us the master plan.
I saw Collins yesterday, and I spoke to him at length. He's adamant that he saw Lisa's murder in a vision and that it's the same man that killed Susan. I think he's genuine. In the last 10 years, clairvoyants, psychics, whatever you want to call them, have been used in over 70 cases and provided direct leads in 6 of them. In America, the numbers are in the hundreds. These people really do exist.
You are wrong in so many ways here, Joe. I don't even know where to start. Did you know about any of this? Obviously not.
Hold on.
Shut up. You know, I expect more than this, Will. A psychic former suspect. Is that what you're telling me? Can you imagine if the press got hold of this? Right, now look, while you were out pursuing this fantasy of yours, we found our boy. Thanks to diligent police work and following the policies I set, we're about to go and pick him up.
Clough heads off, and Benson throws Kavanagh an exasperated look.
Thanks for that, Joe. It's just what I needed.
In an interview room.
I've got nothing to do with these murders, I promise you.
Promises aren't good enough, Darren. See, I've got CCTV footage of you with this. And that's got bloodstains all over it from a murder victim. See where I'm headed?
I found that in a skip.
Come on, you'll have to do better than that.
I'm serious. It was just lying there. Yeah, and it looked in good nick, so I took it. All right, then some nutter on the platform tries to take it off me. I think it's his, so I let him have it.
Stop pissing me about, Darren. I've got you in possession of a coat with Lisa Turner's blood all over it. Skip doesn't cut it. Where were you on the night of the 5th?
I was in the nick, mate. They kept me in overnight suspicion of burglary and then charged me on the 6th. Call them.
Benson heads out. And later, Darren's released.
This leaves us nowhere. 300 bleeding interviews, the most we know about Lisa and Susan is from the PM. We don't even know if we're looking for the same man. Or if there's some maniac out there getting ready to do it again.
Colin said it wasn't him.
You know, it's far too late into a truly shitty day for you to start with that again, Joe.
Benson walks off.
See you tomorrow.
At home, Jimmy gets up and goes to the door.
Who is it?
Joe Kavanagh.
Got a warrant.
Stop pissing around. You got anything to drink?
We'll see.
In the kitchen, Jimmy grabs 2 glasses and the whiskey bottle. Kavanagh takes a seat on the sofa.
Why are you here?
Maybe it's a sparkling company.
He takes 2 glasses of whiskey into the living room and gives one to Kavanagh, who smiles nervously.
You're the nearest thing I've got to a lead. And what you did, what you saw about me, I've never told a soul about that. So I believe you.
She downs her drink in 1.
But I don't know you. I need to know I can trust you.
He gestures for her glass.
What do you want me to say?
Well, that you never repeat it would be a start.
Why would I? I wish I didn't know. Got enough guilt of my own without yours. You can trust me.
I believe that. I don't know why I do, but I do. You're a very strange man, Jimmy.
Flattery will get you everywhere.
Sorry, you've got to admit it's a bit weird. The 2 of us sitting here having this discussion. How would you try and get this guy?
The girls. If I could touch them, I might be able to see what they did. See through their eyes.
Kavanagh drains her glass, then gets to her feet.
I'll see you tomorrow. I'll pick you up early. Might as well lose my job before lunchtime.
Jimmy smiles, then his expression turns serious. The next day at the hospital.
Try and blend in.
As what? Corpse or doctor?
In the mortuary, a covered body is brought into an autopsy room to join another. They're both on examination tables. Once the mortuary assistants left the room, Jimmy gets to his feet, and Kavanagh pulls back one of the sheets to reveal Lisa.
Poor kid.
What's wrong?
It hurts when I do this.
Kavanagh swallows hard as Jimmy places his hand on Lisa's forehead. She's sitting waiting with a bag, looking at her watch.
You bitch!
Someone slaps her hard, then Jimmy falls to the floor.
What did you get?
She knew him. She was waiting for him in the park that night. She was excited.
Scared?
No, eager somehow. Something that she'd hoped for, something that she'd wanted to happen. They were running away together. She loved him.
Who is it?
I don't know, it doesn't work like that. I can't control what I see.
A face? Jimmy, anything?
He thinks for a moment.
Come on.
They head over to the second body, and Kavanagh pulls down the sheet to reveal Susan. Jimmy places his hands on her forehead. He sees her falling, then a bloodied hand. Jimmy collapses once again.
Jimmy! Jimmy, are you all right?
I was there. She was dying. She knew him. And she couldn't believe that he'd done this to her.
Benson walks in.
You've got to be joking.
Later.
Calm down. I mean, you could have compromised the whole case, Joel.
You didn't see what I just saw.
Come on, you can't believe this. Please.
If you exhaust all other possibilities, then what you're left with is the truth.
Teach it out of college, did they? You know, it's taken me 15 years to get where I am, and I am not going to throw it away on this shit.
What else have we got? Jimmy knows things. All I'm saying to you is hear him out.
I can't wait to hear what the sick freak has got to say. You know, now you've let him see them, he's probably going to go in the box and knock one out. Fuck you, Benson. Oh, now we're getting there. True colours, eh, Jimbo? Shame you haven't got a rock handy you could split my head open.
You prick.
But let's face it. The only way you get inside people's heads is by splitting them open.
Well,
how about you let me in yours, eh? What makes you
think? Don't touch me.
Or what?
Don't touch me.
Or what?
Benson and Jimmy struggle, and Jimmy sees a hospital room.
Hello, Tom.
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 What did you say?
You think he might be dying? And deep down? On your own, when you sit with him, you think that might be best. But you can't tell anyone that. Because saying it out loud might make it happen. You just want to be with him all the time, don't you? Tell me I'm wrong.
Get out of my way!
How could I know that?
You're a freak. You're a freak! I don't care if it is true. I never want to see you again. You ever come near me again and I'll kill you. You understand me? I'll kill you! It stops now! No more!
Jimmy hangs his head and closes his eyes. Then he gets up and makes to leave.
Where are you going?
I've done all I can. Got my underwear to worry about.
Kavanagh leans her head against the wall. Sarah's working on her computer at home.
Mum! Mum! I'm back!
Good day?
Yeah, I'm going to show Dad my room.
It's all right.
Sarah nods.
Come on.
Jimmy follows Amy upstairs to her bedroom, and the little girl watches him anxiously as he looks around at her belongings and pictures.
So, what do you think?
I think it's a great room.
He takes a seat on the bed. She hands him a framed photo of the two of them when she was a baby. As he touches it, he has a vision of holding her in the garden. He smiles, and in his vision, Sarah joins them.
Are you all right?
Yeah. I'm great. Thank you.
In the kitchen, Sarah's pouring a glass of wine as Jimmy comes downstairs.
Jimmy,
Hiya. I'm Dan.
Jimmy.
Shit, this is awkward.
Are you staying for dinner?
Oh, you're more than welcome.
I've got somewhere I've got to go, so... Thanks. I'll see you soon.
Oh, yeah.
Another time, perhaps.
Dan puts out his hand to shake Jimmy's, and the others look on expectantly.
Thanks again.
Amy looks upset. Sarah marches out of the house after Jimmy.
What the hell was that?
I'm sorry.
He invites you into his house and you can't even shake his hand.
What do you want me to say? You think it's easy for me, being chatty to a bloke who's married to my wife, who's bringing up my kid?
You should have thought of that before you cut us out of your life.
You think that's what I wanted?
So why did you do it?
I had no choice.
Yes, you did. You could have chosen us. If I kept quiet, if I hadn't told you, if I called the police straight away.
But it wasn't your fault, it was mine.
Then why did you push me away?
Because I didn't deserve you.
That was my decision. For me to decide, not you.
You don't know what I was turning into in there.
I loved you so much, Jimmy. And you threw that away. For what?
She walks off. And Jimmy's left looking tortured and upset. Later, at home, he's staring at a photograph of the three of them before his conviction. He remembers Sarah on the day of her attack, then Strick talking to her in the visiting room at the prison.
Even lovelier than your photo.
Someone's gonna be going at night, till I get out and come visit her personally.
Jimmy? I don't understand. What are you saying? Talk to me.
I want a divorce.
Next, Jimmy visits Benson, who's at the hospital by the bedside of an unconscious young boy.
Did I not make myself clear enough to you last time?
You know you need my help.
I need to see their bedrooms, the girls. I need to see their lives, not their deaths. Find out who they were.
Benson gets up and follows Jimmy from the room. They stand by a window, and Benson stares in at the young boy.
You might not like me. You might not like these things I can do, but, you know, maybe they would help find this man who has killed these girls.
Benson's unmoved. Jimmy looks in at Tom.
What's wrong with him?
It's called locked-in syndrome. Tom can hear, think, everything. He just can't move, can't communicate. It's like solitary confinement in your own body.
Benson glances at Jimmy, then nods a little. Wordlessly, he walks back into the room, then steps back to let Jimmy pass him. Jimmy slowly walks over to Tom's bed, while Benson looks on.
Hello, Tom. My name's Jimmy.
Jimmy lays his hands on Tom's arm and bows his head. Then he looks up at Benson with a determined expression.
He doesn't blame you for the accident. He should have waited for you.
Benson leaves the room, then gazes through the window at his son. Jimmy gets up from the bedside and joins him in the corridor.
It's not his fault. He was such a good kid. Do anything, you know. No trouble.
You've got to smile for him. Give him hope. Tom thinks he's going to get better.
Benson nods gently, then heads back into his son, while Jimmy watches through the glass. From the bedside, Benson looks up at Jimmy with an expression of acceptance. Now, Benson gets out of his car. With Kavanagh and Jimmy, he walks towards the front door of Lisa's house. Inside, Jimmy wanders around Lisa's bedroom. He reaches into the wardrobe and takes hold of a white dress. Something comes to him as Benson and Kavanagh look on.
She was pregnant. It was his. That's why they were meeting. Why she was so excited. She thought they were running away together. You knew?
On the autopsy report.
But you weren't going to tell me.
You know now.
Any names?
It was a secret.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Jimmy shakes Lisa's father's hand.
Thank you.
Outside, Kavanagh turns to Jimmy.
Anything?
Just grief. Big black hole where his daughter used to be.
Thought you'd been through everything already.
The officers who came to look at Susan's things were searching for evidence. This is more, well, to get a sense of who she was.
Well, we can tell you that.
I don't want someone making judgments about my little girl.
Of course not.
In Susan's bedroom.
There has to be a link between them.
She feels much younger than Lisa.
There's only a year between them.
Not always about age, though, is it? Lisa was knowing. Susan wasn't.
Is this getting us anywhere?
I can only tell you what I feel, all right? All I'm getting is happy vibes. She feels like a well-adjusted kid. Like my daughter feels the same when she's 16.
Any good?
It all helps, Mrs. Evans.
She was a good girl, Susan. The best.
I saw nothing to say any different, Mrs. Evans. You obviously loved her very much.
When Jimmy shakes Robert Evans' hand, he sees him at both murders in a vision, then collapses.
What's going on? What's the matter with him? Sorry, he's a diabetic. Give us a hand, Joe.
Yep.
Get him a Mars bar, be right as rain.
The two officers bundle Jimmy out.
Lisa! It was him, don't you see? He killed both of them.
You're an inspector, Will. You don't need permission to arrest a suspect.
But I need grounds. And a psychic is nowhere near good enough.
If it's his baby, we'll DNA test him. And it has to be his coat. We'll tell him it's for elimination purposes.
And if he says no?
In an interview room, Kavanagh offers Robert a mug.
I don't like to leave Gail, so what is it that you think I can tell you?
It's not so much what you can tell us, it's more something you can give us.
A DNA sample.
Kavanagh takes a sip of her drink.
You can't possibly think that I had anything to do with this. That's ridiculous.
It's for elimination purposes, so we can catch the man who did kill her.
Benson takes a sip of his.
I'd like to talk to my lawyer first.
Benson smiles. Now in Clough's office.
He's the girl's father. This is going to be all over the news by 6 o'clock.
While we're here, sir, I think we should arrest him and search his house.
You taking a piss? On what basis?
Because I think he killed her, sir.
Oh, and where the hell are you getting that idea from, hmm? Hey? This is Collins, isn't it? This is your evidence. Unbelievable. Sleuth! Right. This is what's going to happen, right? You're going to get a car to take Mr. Evans home. But only after a grovelling apology, and then... Now, you two are off this investigation. As of tomorrow, you're back on call with CID. That's it.
Well, it's good of you to have such faith in our instincts, sir.
Now, piss off, Will. You've lost it, mate. Go on.
Benson and Kavanagh head out.
How can you have let him go? What was the point of me going through all of this if they don't believe me?
Look, we've done everything we can. We've been taken off the case.
Shaking his head, Jimmy walks off.
Jimmy!
Leave him. Worry about yourself.
Kavanagh follows Benson back inside. Jimmy heads home. Sitting on the sofa, he has graphic flashbacks to the murders and the investigation. Jack's reflection, Walter's coffin, shaking someone's hand, Benson studying his computer screen. He becomes increasingly agitated as the visions continue to flow. He glances around the room tensely. Sometime later, he lets himself into the Evans house through the back door. In the living room, Gail and Robert look up at him with surprise.
Did you forget something?
Something we forgot to go over with Robert.
Do you need me?
Why don't you make us a cup of tea? Mm-hmm.
Lovely.
Gail heads into the kitchen, looking anxious.
We can't keep it from her forever. She's going to find out what you are.
And what's that?
A killer.
I'm a teacher.
Why did you do it, Robert?
I didn't do anything. God. You know, I'm grieving the death of my daughter.
Lying just makes it worse for you and for everyone else.
I'm not lying. Look, I don't know who you are. You're not a policeman. You shouldn't be here.
So why are you talking to me?
I'm not. Not anymore. I want you to leave.
When Jimmy walks towards him and takes a seat opposite, Robert looks annoyed.
Why did you kill her, Robert? Is it because of the baby? Lisa's baby? Your baby?
I don't know what you're talking about. I've done nothing wrong. Why don't you believe me?
Because you're lying.
Okay, get out.
What's going on, Robert?
Get out of my house.
Robert, what's going on?
Hey, you're upsetting my wife.
I'm not upsetting her. You did that when you killed Lisa.
Don't listen to him, Gail. Just call the police. Now! I'm not going to ask you again.
I'm not going anywhere until you tell the truth.
Fine.
Robert shoves Jimmy up against a bookcase, bringing on another vision.
Yes, please, he just barged in.
they thought it was me. They accused me of battering Lisa. I want you out of my head.
I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Please, just leave.
You have to know what this man is. Lisa thought you were running away together. She had no idea that what you'd got planned was a weekend for one in an abortion clinic. And once you'd hit her, there was no going back, was there, Robert? It seemed easier, didn't it? Come on, you can tell me, Robert. Talk to me.
I don't know what he's talking about, OK? Please, just leave us alone, OK? Do you not think that we've suffered enough? Our daughter is dead.
So is Lisa Turner.
Why do you keep talking about Lisa? Why? My daughter is dead. Someone murdered my daughter, took her from us, and you're standing there talking about some other girl I don't even know.
Ask him.
OK, but we don't need to listen to this.
You love your wife very much, don't you, Robert?
Yes.
That way Lisa had to die. So that Gail wouldn't be hurt.
Just leave us alone.
Why is he saying this?
I know what it's like to love someone so much that you would kill for them, to protect them.
OK, I'm not you. I don't know you. I've not killed anyone.
But why Susan?
You dare talk about my daughter? Don't you even speak her name?
You killed your daughter. You watched while she died. He killed your daughter.
I'll kill you!
Robert, let him go!
Talk about, I'll kill you! You talk about her like she was anyone! She was my little girl! I loved her! I left her! I loved her!
Bitch! How could you do that to us?
Jimmy sees Susan's dad.
It was an accident. He didn't mean it. He didn't mean it.
Robert walks away from him. And as tears flow down his face, Jimmy sinks to the floor. An unmarked car speeds along.
It was never meant to happen, any of it. Any of it! I made one mistake!
Gail watches as Robert puts his hands up to his head in bitter exasperation.
It was Lisa, she came on to me. I was flattered. Yes. I didn't love her. It was not like you. But it was like some kind of a drug. Okay, I hated myself, but I couldn't stop it. She told me, she said that she wanted to meet me. She told me about the baby. And I said that I would deal with it. She went mad. She was threatening me. She threatened to tell you. I didn't want to lose you, so I tried to end it, but she was just threatening me, and it was like something was just waiting over me, and I just was hitting her, all right? And I was hitting her! She was dead.
But Susan knew.
I just wanted her to listen. To know that everything could be all right, and she wouldn't listen to me. She was angry. She ran and she fell. She just fell. She lay there looking up at me, and I knew that I needed to go to her, but I was frozen. Then she was gone. There was nothing I could do to bring her back.
I knew you were seeing someone. You killed Susan. You killed my little girl.
Oh, I'll kill you!
Benson pulls Gail away from Robert.
Get him out! Take him out of here!
Okay. I didn't mean it. Okay. You know that I didn't mean it.
Come on, sir.
It's okay.
Benson holds Gail as she sobs. Jimmy slips out of consciousness.
Jimmy?
A brain scan.
There. This grey area here is an astrocytoma, a mass in the temporal lobe.
A tumour?
Yes.
Can you take it out?
We need to do a lot more tests, Mr. Collins, before we can decide on a plan of action.
But this is what's been causing the visions?
Almost certainly.
Then I want you to take it out. I can't put up with them anymore. Can we keep this between us for now?
The doctor nods and takes down the brain scan picture before heading out of the room. Jimmy stares at his hands. In a flashback to his prison days, he's sharpening the knife that Walter gave him. In the visiting room, Strick stares at Sarah.
I'm beginning to think that the visions might be a punishment. He was a complete psycho.
Guilt's a powerful emotion.
I can't do it.
But there might be a chance, too. I had no choice. A chance for me to redeem myself.
I can't do it.
Walter's keeping a lookout in a gloomy prison corridor. He takes a drag on a cigarette, then casually walks off, giving Jimmy a nod as he passes him, hidden around a corner with the knife raised. Strick and his heavy are coming towards him, and Jimmy leaps out at them with a knife. He cuts the man's throat, then attacks Strick.
You'll pay for what you've done.
Covered in blood, Jimmy breathes rapidly, then makes his way down the corridor, sobbing. Jimmy slowly wakes to find himself in his hospital bed. He lifts his eyes and sees Sarah watching him.
Hey.
Hey.
How did you get here?
Inspector Benson rang.
What did he tell you?
Said that you're a hero.
Amy gives him a hug and kiss.
So what's wrong?
I just got a bang on the head. I'll be out of here in a couple of days.
Good.
As Sarah touches his arm, Kavanagh comes in.
Sorry. I didn't realise you had guests.
It's all right. This is Amy, my daughter. And this is Sarah, Amy's mum.
Hi. Joe Kavanagh, I'm with the police. I'll come back.
No, I want to know what's been going on. Could you give us a minute?
We'll grab a cup of tea.
You better come back.
Sarah and Amy head out past Kavanagh. Sarah hesitates in the door and looks back.
So how do you feel?
Shit.
It's always a good sign.
What happened?
They charged Robert Evans with both murders. Full confession. He's on suicide watch. You had me worried there.
Good. Nice to know you care.
You did it. I reckon that's the slate wiped clean.
Kavanagh kisses Jimmy on the forehead, and he reaches up to hold her neck. He's suddenly struck by a vision of her being tied to a chair in a cellar-like room. She seems to be gagged, and a man is carrying chains and walking towards her menacingly.
Jimmy? What did you see? Jimmy? What did you see?
Jimmy looks utterly petrified.